This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to an episode of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. Another episode of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. I am Dan Favalli coming at you, as always, with my super duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario, thinks Ricky Rubio is the greatest point guard of all time, co-host Andrew D. Bailey. We are going to roll out the first of our four massive trade deadline previews. So first, you're welcome. And two, I do want to remind everyone first to continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. It really means a lot to us when we see those numbers go up. You can, of course, consume us wherever else you get your podcasts, but iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you're out there, that you're listening. Search Hardwood Knox. Subscribe if you haven't already. Give us a rating. Throw us a written review. We love reading those. And if you've already done all of that, tell your family and your friends. Again, we are more than just a stats podcast, although I am so happy that I have the big analytic here as a co-host. So, Andy, the question that everyone always wants to know, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
That was a lukewarm response.
all those things you sneak into the intro, like today's was Ricky Rubio's, the NBA's best point guard, I never know whether to push back or not.
They're always topical, though, but people don't realize it because they're not in our text box.
They are. They're very topical.
And funny story about that last night, I must have texted you back with an automatic response from my Apple Watch because
yeah, I saw that and I was like, was that supposed to go to somebody else?
No, and I didn't even realize you texted me back, I guess, because I answered you and didn't know it. So when I went to text you this morning to tell you I was running late, I said sounds good to you bitching about how bad Rubio yeah. was.
It's pretty funny in context. This is what I said about Rubio. Those 2 or 3 months last season were great, but you can't get too far with a point guard as inconsistent as him. And then you just say, sounds good.
That's actually what happened.
And I guess maybe it does sound good. So whatever, it worked.
Our trade deadline previews are going to be broken up into four parts because Andy and I don't trust ourselves to be able to go for 15 teams per podcast without speaking for 3 hours. We're going to set
especially
it up.
Especially with trades involved.
Yes, we do have trades for every single team. So, again, you're welcome, everyone. You're free to hate them because you will. Basically, we're just going to establish whether teams are buyers or sellers. We'll talk if they have any notable untouchable players. Poison pill extensions will automatically be considered untouchable. We'll talk about notable trade assets, though we might not just go through all of them. They might be self-explanatory. Any notable inbound draft picks, and we're keeping these to pre-2025. I don't think there are a lot of commitments out there that extend that long, but just in case anyone gets bent out of shape when we don't talk about them. And then, of course, outbound draft picks. We're not going to talk about top 55 protected ones. Most of those are not going to convey. If they do, maybe we'll mention it. Best salary matching assets, the toughest player to move on every team, the most likely player to move on every team, their salary cap situation in a nutshell, what to watch for, and then we will have a trade idea. It sounds complicated, but I think it's going to be a useful primer. I think we did this last year, so I'm excited to do this. I don't know about you, even though we're talking about the East Lottery teams today.
I am too. Trades are always fun to talk about, and I think they're fun for people to talk about with us as well on Twitter and, you know, however else they interact with us. So I'm pumped, and shout out to you because you're the one who does all the legwork on this. And I've I think I've said it a few places, but you really are the best in the business at fake trades. So it'll be fun to look at some of these.
You're making me blush. I can't handle it right now. You just want to go alphabetical order with the lottery teams?
Sure.
That would mean that we are onto the Atlanta Hawks, who are low-key ruining their tank with how well they've been playing lately. Buyers or sellers? I think they're pretty clearly sellers.
Yeah.
They're one of the only teams that have shown they're willing to take on, or not, they haven't shown it yet, but they're one of the only teams that you look at and say, oh, they'll take on money into next season. They're untouchable players for me. John Collins, Kevin Huerter, and Trae Young. I'm wondering if Kevin Huerter should even be on there, but I think he should.
I think he probably should too. I've posted the stat, and I think I've even mentioned it on the podcast a couple times, but when those three are on the floor together, Atlanta's a positive this season, which is pretty dang good for a team that's 16-34. The three guys are together. This is the first year of their existence as sort of a trio. So I think keeping that young core together is probably a priority for Atlanta.
Their notable trade assets, DeAndre Bembry, who still really can't shoot but has shown some ball handling and does some stuff on the defensive end and is a pretty good rebounder for someone his size. Dwayne Dedmon, expiring at $7.2 million. And Taurean Prince, who was rumored by Sham Sharani of The Athletic to be available. Do you buy into them being willing to move Taurean Prince?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably movable. I don't know if he's like the hottest commodity on the market this year. His numbers, he had that crazy closing kick to last season, and he hasn't really picked up where he left off. In fact, his numbers, at least in terms of some of the advanced stuff, is certainly worse this season than it was last season, and maybe that's just because he's adjusting to a different role. But I think a team could probably still talk themselves into him. I mean, theoretically, he should be able to defend multiple positions. He's still a guy who averages comfortably double figures, shooting probably around league average from three. So there are things to like about him, especially with the combo forward being sort of in vogue the last couple of years.
I just don't know what you move him for, because this is something where you look really bad if you trade him for a low-end first-round pick and he pans out somewhere else. He did have the left ankle injury this year. He talked about improving as a ball handler over the summer and then did not improve as a ball handler. I guess it would just take the right offer, but he would be an interesting piece to include, because I think with their expiring contracts, which we're about to get to, it's just they're not going to get a first-round pick for any of them in a vacuum. He's one of those players that they could attach that maybe then gets them a better return in general.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
They have all their own future first-round picks. They also have Dallas's top five protected 2019 first-round pick. They still should not have passed on Luka Doncic, but Trae Young has been playing well. I think he's going to be really good, and if they get a nice player with that selection, it'll bridge the gap. But again, that separation, I think Luka is that good, it's always going to be there. You know what the one thing I thought about was, though, is what if Dallas just decided to just tank and was able to – they're not going to finish with a bottom five record, but what if they ended up with a top five pick, or what if they won the lottery and we got Zion and Luka?
Oh, it'd be insane. Atlanta is actually one of my favorite possible spots for Zion, too. Him next to John Collins would be crazy.
That would be pretty nuts.
But right now – right now, Dallas has a 9.4% shot at a top four pick, according to Tankathon. That's not an insignificant amount.
No, that's higher than I thought it was.
Even where they are right now, which is the 11th worst lottery odds, they have almost a 10% chance to keep their pick, and probably a little bit. Well, no, they can't move up to five. I don't think so. Yeah, that a pretty good chance to keep their pick. Even so, I mean, that's going to be really fun to watch. Whatever happens with that lottery,
and I think Atlanta could get over it not conveying this year because they have a ton of second rounders, a nice asset base in place, and I don't know that anyone outside the top five in this year's draft is ever going to make a major difference. They might want to have the flyer on. It's still top five protected in 2020 before going top three in 2021 and 2022.
Yeah.
And 2020. Oh, and then unprotected in 2023. Atlanta also has a bunch of second round picks. They have Cleveland's first round pick, but I'm counting it as 2020 because it's top 10 protected this year. And it's top 10 protected next year, so it's probably not going to convey either. So expect that one to roll into two first-round picks. They have Charlotte's 2019 second-round pick, and they also have Oklahoma City's 2022 first-round pick, lottery protected.
I didn't realize they had so many incoming picks.
Yeah.
That cupboard is kind of packed.
Yeah, and it's actually not many second-round picks. It's a lot of they have this year's second-round pick coming from the less favorable of Minnesota or the Lakers, and then they're going to get a 2023 second-round pick from Charlotte or Brooklyn. Bunch of swap rights involved in there. So you're right, the asset cupboard is pretty darn full. Their best salary-matching assets, Kent Bazemore, his $19.3 million player option for next year. He has not played in quite some time, which I'm wondering if that ruins the whole inevitable, you know, Brandon Knight filler and a pick for Kent Bazemore trade that I think everyone's just been waiting to happen. And maybe, I don't know how many games he ended up missing. Did he return to the lineup this week?
He played last night. I know that.
All right. So he got 19 minutes last night. Maybe that's just in time. And 3 of 5 from the field, 2 of 4 from three. So, but he missed. It was a ton of games. It was close to 15. So that might be something to watch. They also have Jeremy Lin expiring at $13.8 million. Their toughest player to move for me, I think, is pretty clearly Miles Plumlee. He has $12.5 million left on his deal after this season.
There's so many big guys in the history of the NBA who just secured an awesome contract for themselves and barely played after that. He's another one. I'm with you on all those. It seems like Bazemore and Lin make sense as salary matching pieces. And I think both of those guys could probably still help teams in the right situation. Spoiler alert, I feel like the trade that you have keyed up for this team, Lin could actually start for the team that you have him going to. So he's one of their most interesting assets to watch. But yeah, I can't imagine anyone taking on Miles Plumlee.
Good. Really becoming a free agent in 2016 was just like winning the lottery. You think about Alan Crabb.
Yeah.
They don't have to worry about the luxury tax. They have plenty of flexibility under it. What to watch for is, will they take on salary? Will they actually make a move at the deadline? Or Deadman's playing so well. The team is just kind of clicking. There's chemistry there. Is there a chance that they hold serve and just reevaluate their position in the summer? And would they be willing? I guess there's not a lot of contracts out there that are going to damage the books, but are they willing to take on money beyond next season into 2020, 2021?
And I think, wasn't Travis Schlink the one who said last summer that they're open to that? Like he said it straight up.
Well, them and Cleveland, there are other teams that I think should be, but I feel like the Cavaliers and the Hawks would be the two teams most likely to do that.
Yeah, there's no reason not to explore that. You've got your only three untouchable players all on rookie contracts, so you have plenty of time to get creative with the books and take on bad money to keep adding to that asset cupboard we've already talked about.
Who would be your most likely player to be traded for them?
You have Jeremy Lin here, and I think I agree. His salary is a little bit easier to move than Kent Bazemore's. And again, I still think he can probably help some teams this season.
And Deadman's been really good, but when it's bigs, there's always that opportunity that they get bought out. I know Tim Bontemps from ESPN.com said there was a report that the Sixers might have to give up Fultz to get Deadman. And that's just, I know Fultz's value is nothing, but that's really just selling incredibly low. I wouldn't do that if I were the Sixers. I mean, maybe if Torian Prince is coming back in that deal, then you could start to talk, but that would be selling way low.
Jeremy Lin is averaging basically 20 points and 7 assists per 36 minutes and has a true shooting percentage just barely below 60.
And he's getting to the foul line. He's always gotten to the foul line well, but he's getting there a ton this year.
Yeah, he is. Looks like
45.
Six attempts per 36 minutes.
Yeah, so 45.6% free throw attempt rate, which is just bonkers.
And he has 6 free attempts and almost 5 3-point attempts. So that's really good shot profile type stuff there.
And what's good for him, well, you know, maybe we should talk about, let's get to the trade that we have, because that ties into it. I have the Atlanta Hawks getting Henry Ellison, John Lohr, Glenn Robinson III, who has a team option for next season. So he's basically an expiring contract. And then a 2019 first-round pick from the Pistons with top 12 protection for DeAndre Bembry and Jeremy Lin. My criticism of this deal would be, can the Pistons kind of squeeze in another wing that doesn't really shoot? At least Bembry handles the ball, and he's, I don't want to say he's insurance against them getting rid of or just letting Stanley Johnson walk over the summer, but he's shown more this season as a playmaker than Stanley Johnson. Is that because of Blake Griffin and how much he dominates the ball? It's possible. If you could get Taurean Prince from Atlanta, that would be the perfect fit. But then I think you're looking at including at least your 2019 second rounder, if not something else. So yeah, it was the Henry Ellison, John Lohr, Glenn Robinson III, a 2019 first for DeAndre Bembry and Jeremy Lin.
Does the money still work if you put Prince in there instead of Bembry?
That's a good question. I think I looked and it would still keep the Pistons out of the tax, but I'll double check that while you're vamping a little bit.
I like it either way.
You would do it for the Hawks if you're giving up Prince?
Well, I was going to say, I like it more for Detroit if Prince is in there. And I think you're probably right that they might have to send back another pick. If you're getting Taurean Prince, just because I think he's going to help the Pistons more in the short term than Bembry would. I don't think that's a bold thing to declare. And I mean, that would be really like, okay, we're out of the playoffs right now, move for Detroit, but we really think that we can get in. We're paying a ton of money to Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. For us to miss the playoffs this year, it would just be bad. And I could see the front office talking themselves into, we have to make a very serious push for the playoffs, because to essentially waste a year with how much they're paying to the top end of that roster, I think that's difficult for some organizations to swallow. Like I said, I could see Jeremy Lin starting for the Pistons. I ran these numbers, he was either yesterday or 2 days ago, and over the last month, maybe even 2 months, it's been almost 2 months, because it's since December 1st. They are getting almost nothing from anyone after Griffin and Drummond. I just did like average game score since December 1st, which is when they were 13-7, and then they went on this crazy losing streak. And Griffin is posting like a top 15 level game score in that time frame. Drummond is like top 60 level, and then everyone else is like top 100 and be like outside the top 130. So Griffin needs some help if they're going to make a playoff run, and help with some shooting would be huge. And Jeremy Lin has been a good shooter this year.
He's played with both. Like, he's been the on ball guard, but he's also played with ball dominant guards in the past.
Yeah. And so he can play off the ball if Blake Griffin continues to run sort of point forward, which would make sense. If you get Taurean Prince too, then I think there's a real possibility that they could sneak back into the playoffs. Right now, they're looks like about 3 games out, maybe 2.5 of 8. I mean, that's not insurmountable. If you make a deal like this at the deadline, things click quickly. I mean, that's always a big disclaimer, is how long does it take new guys to gel with the team. But if they're going to make any kind of a push for the postseason this year, they got to do something, because this team as presently constructed, just it's hard to imagine them getting in.
So the money still works with Taurean Prince subbed in for DeAndre Bembry. I just want to see if it would still keep the Pistons out of the tax, and it does. If you give Atlanta a 2019 second round pick, are they doing that if it's Prince instead of Bembry? That'd be, I mean, if there's top 12 protection on the first rounder and there's a chance that you're going to get a lottery pick anyway, it's something to probably consider.
Yeah, I would certainly consider it. And like you said, maybe they look stupid in a year or two if Taurean Prince is like consistently that player that he was at the end of last season. But I think you could talk yourself into those three guys that we mentioned at the top being your only untouchables. I mean, the chances of Prince burning you two years down the road are there, but
they have not been able to, I know there's something about their personnel, but he has not been able to defend fours like I thought that he would eventually be able to. And that just might be something they look at.
Yeah. And that's something that he probably needs to do career wise at some point, and something that he certainly does not need to do as much in Detroit, because they're not sliding Blake Griffin to the five super often in Detroit. So yeah, I think they should at least consider something like that. If it came down to we want Prince and not Bembry from Detroit's perspective, I think you still got to think about it.
We already off the rails with time, so I'm going to try and get through at least the team's vitals quicker before we actually choose like untouchable players and all that, or excuse me, toughest player to move and all that. So the Chicago Bulls, are they buyers or sellers? I think we're both in agreement that they're sellers.
Yeah.
Or should be sellers. They might do nothing. They're untouchable players, and Andy will interrupt me if he disagrees. I have just Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen. They're notable trade assets. Ryan Arcidiacono, he has an implicit no-trade clause and will be an early bird restricted free agent this summer. Chris Dunn, Chandler Hutchinson, Bobby Portis, who is also a restricted free agent this summer. Wayne Seldon cannot be traded with another player and is an early bird restricted free agent this summer. And then Denzel Valentine, even though he's out for the season, still an interesting player for me. They're notable inbound draft picks. They have all their own future first rounders. They have Memphis's 2019 second round pick and 2020 second round pick protected for the bottom five selections. That Justin Holiday trade was a disaster for Memphis. They were not the team that should have made that trade. But anyway, Chicago has New Orleans' 2021 second round pick, swap rights, and then Detroit's 2022 second round pick, also swap rights. There, that gets us into their notable outbound draft picks. Their 2019 second round pick is going to Philly, which that could be like 32 or 33. That's a good pick.
Yeah.
Philly has all those nice, we'll get to them in another pot, but they have all those nice little seconds they can include in deals. Their best salary matching assets, Zach LaVine has 3 years and $58.5 million on his contract after this season. I would not call him untouchable. What say you, Andy?
No, I don't think so either. I also don't know how easy he would be to move.
Yes, that is, if Cristiano Felicio was not on this roster, he might be the toughest player to move. Robin Lopez expiring at $14.4 million. Jabari Parker has a $20 million team option for next season, basically an expiring contract. My toughest player to move is Cristiano Felicio, who doesn't fit into any of the other categories to me, at 2 years and $15.7 million after this season.
How many total minutes he's even played here? Looks like 294. It's actually a little bit more than I thought.
Which is hysterical.
It's very low. Yeah.
Stands to your point about bigs getting paid. And he was 2017, though. That's what made that deal look even worse.
That's true, yeah. It doesn't seem to matter if it's like a big cap boom year or not for big guys. The one that I always think about is Desigana Jop. He got a huge contract from the Mavericks years ago and then just sort of never played again.
Hey, Dampier, too. They played so –
Dampier's contract is crazy.
Most likely player to be traded. I think this is tougher. I have Bobby Portis just because he's going to be a restricted free agent, and the Bulls have Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. But I don't – I could see this team not – I don't even know who else you would throw in there. I mean, maybe they try and reroute Wayne Seldon – at some point, should I have counted Carmelo Anthony on this roster because I didn't? Is it him?
Oh, I thought you were taking a shot at Jabari Parker. I forgot Carmelo's even on the Bulls.
I just didn't, because he's not. I mean, I guess I probably should have added him to like best salary matching assets or something. But I just think it's Bobby Portis if it's going to be anyone for them.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I wonder what his future is. Like you said, he's a restricted free agent. I can't think of a team off the top of my head that's going to throw more than, I don't know, $6 or $7 million per year. Like, what's his ceiling?
Right, if he gets the mid-level exception, the non-taxpayer, which I think is 9.2 for next year, that would be a real shock to me.
Yeah, that would be a ceiling, I would say. I can't imagine going above that.
He seems like empty calories bounce. That he can be an entertaining player, but I don't know that he really helps you win games.
No, I agree.
And then their salary cap situation, plenty of flexibility under the tax. What to watch for is interesting with them. My question for them, and I don't know if you have a different question, are they open to swallowing salary for picks and prospects? Because there was that report from the Chicago Tribune's Casey Johnson that teams that wanted to trade for Jabari also wanted the Bulls to take back long-term money or money into 2019-2020, and that was a deal-breaker for the Bulls, which I guess could mean that they fancy themselves free agency players this summer, which is fine, but they are going to have max room. They can get past $35 million really easily, and they can even ratchet that up to close to $50 million if they want to. I just don't, for the position that they're in, I know you've already paid Zach LaVine, but if you can get, you know, your cupboard isn't particularly full. You have more, like, you don't have a first-round pick inbound, and you're losing this year's second-round pick, which is basically a really late first-round pick.
I think they should be willing to do that. That, of course, is reliant on a front office that hasn't been super cutting edge basically the entire time they've been together. So whether they actually will is a different question, but it's certainly something they should think about. What marquee free agent is going to want to go to the Bulls this season?
Anthony Davis doesn't even want to be traded to them, and he's from Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe reports like that will get the Bulls front office to sort of scratch their heads and think, well, are we really going to be free agent players? I know they have some cachet still from the Jordan era, and it's a big city. But they've been kind of a mess for a few years now, and messes don't often attract big free agents, the Lakers notwithstanding. So yeah, they should certainly at least be willing to entertain that possibility. I think that's what smart tanking teams do, is take on that bad money to continue to add potential future pieces.
Which is why the Bulls probably will not do that. The trade I have for them, though, does have them do that. It's a trade between the Nets and the Bulls. I have the Bulls getting Alan Crabb, Hollis Jefferson, who's a restricted free agent this summer, the New York Knicks' 2019 second-round pick, which Brooklyn owns, and then a 2020 second-round pick. It's from Denver coming in from the Nets. So that's probably going to be a late second-rounder. And then the Nets would receive Jabari Parker.
So I looked at this before we started recording, and I actually love this trade. It accomplishes some things that I like for both teams. First of all, we already talked about taking on money for Chicago and getting some picks in exchange for taking on money. And to get second multiple picks, even though they're second rounders, for Jabari Parker at this point, I think would be, you could probably term that a win for the Bulls. Crabb and Hollis Jefferson, I mean, they obviously don't do a lot for Chicago, but you're not looking for great help right now if you're the Bulls, or at least you shouldn't be. As for the Nets, I think this is just sort of in keeping with their strategy ever since Sean Marks got there, which is find players who have lottery pedigree, or in Parker and Russell's case, like top two pick pedigree, that didn't work out in their previous situations for whatever reason, and see if you can get something out of them. And I think the Nets coaching staff, it's really smart. I think they have a good player development program. And I think if you have Jabari Parker at the four there, I would trust them to extract Parker's potential more than the Bulls or more than Jason Kidd with the Bucks. I think it would be really interesting to see if they could sort of revive his career. I mean, look, D'Angelo Russell right now is getting a ton of buzz as a possible all-star. And I think a lot of people would have been pretty surprised to hear that a year or two ago. So I really trust their player development, and I think he could fit there pretty well.
A lot of people said that about Jahlil Okafor last year, although I think you can always argue that the fast-paced Nets were a bad fit for him. I agree with everything you said, and this comes with the bonus of they would be able to, having gotten rid of Hollis Jefferson and Crabb, they would have more than $45 million in cap space next year while, for this summer, if you want to say that, while carrying D'Angelo Russell's $21-plus million hold.
Wow.
So and that sets them up really well for the offseason.
I think a free agent could really be intrigued by, too.
Yeah, for sure.
They are on the rise, for sure.
It just comes down to, I think, are they out on Hollis Jefferson? I think they kind of should be. His jumper's never going to come along. Even his mid-range game, which was great last year, has not been good this year. So it would be something, if you're not giving up a first and you're getting rid of Allen Crabb, I'm definitely thinking about it.
And I don't think it shouldn't be hard at all to talk yourself into Parker having more long-term potential than Hollis Jefferson. I mean, even with all the question marks about Parker's defense, I still think there's a higher ceiling there.
They could use the extra shot creation with Dinwiddie out at the moment, too.
For sure, yeah.
That brings us to the wonderful Cleveland Cavaliers. Buyers or sellers? They are established sellers. So Andy doesn't even get to have an opinion. I don't have an opinion. That's objectively true. They're untouchable players. Larry Nance Jr., because of his poison pill provision, it just gets too hard to match salaries. Colin Sexton, and then I also have Jetty Osman. And I don't know if that might even be a stretch.
Jetty's balling lately.
That's fair. All right, so Jetty Osman's right there. Notable trade assets, they have Rodney Hood, implicit no trade clause, will lose his bird rights if he approves a trade, and Ante Zizic. Their inbound draft picks, they have Utah's 2020 second-round pick, Milwaukee's 2021 first-round pick, but it's not going to convey until 2022 because of Milwaukee's commitment and protections to Phoenix this year. They have Milwaukee's 2021 second-round pick and Washington's 2022 second-round pick. Notable outbound draft picks, there are actually more than you want from a team in this situation, but their 2019 second-rounder is going to the Clippers, New York, Orlando, or Sacramento, depending on how that obligation shakes out. Their 2020 first-round pick is owed to Atlanta. Again, I'm assuming it rolls over with its top 10 protection this year. They'll probably keep that because they should be, unless they keep Kevin Love and just everybody balls out and they're like the 9 seed in the East or something. They'll get to keep that, but it is top 10 protected owed to Atlanta. They owe a 2020 second round pick to Charlotte and a 2024 second round pick to Utah. Swap rights, though. Their best salary matching assets, they have quite a few. Alec Burks expiring at $11.5 million. Jordan Clarkson has another year and $13.4 million left on his deal after this one. Matthew Dellavedova, one of the net rating swing kings this year, apparently, has another year and $9.6 million left on his deal. John Henson has another year and $10.5 million left on his deal. Kevin Love, I did not list under notable assets and had him as a salary matcher at 4 years and $120.4 million. I just don't think he's played enough. If you want to quibble over that, I think there will be people that might. That's fine. J.R. Smith, $3.9 million partial guarantee for next season, though because he was signed under the previous CBA, the prevailing thought is that he won't be moved until over the summer when his full salary will still count for trade purposes and teams can waive him for that $3.9 million amount. And then Tristan Thompson has another year and $18.5 million left on his deal. Who is their toughest player to move for you? It's weird. They don't really have – I don't think you look – except for Kevin Love, and maybe he's the toughest player to move.
I was tempted to say Kevin Love.
It would be – I think you could move him. It'd be tough to get adequate value for him.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it.
I had John Henson just because he's a big who's owed money and is out for the season with his wrist injury. Or I'm just guessing is out for the season because he had surgery and we haven't heard anything about his timetable and his return from that.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I think the way that you just phrased Kevin Love's situation is probably good too. I wish he had been able to play at least a little bit this season and maybe show a little bit of something so some teams could talk themselves into giving a real offer for him. But that's a lot of money to a dude who's going to be, what, 35 at the end of that contract?
34? No, you're right. I think it might be 35. This is his age 30 season.
So, you know, all that money over the next 4 years for a guy you're not totally sure is healthy, a guy you're you can probably be pretty sure is not the player he was in Minnesota. And I've still told myself a couple times, like, even if they, if you, let's say Utah got a Kevin Love midway through Minnesota Love and Kevin Love Cleveland. Does that make sense? Like, you split the difference between yeah. what he was in Cleveland and what he was in Minnesota. That's a really good player still, but I don't know how you can expect that with a whole lot of confidence. So it's just a tough situation for him right now.
And he's not going to be back before the trade deadline. Okay. That's pretty clear. So he doesn't have a chance to even just kind of sort of reestablish any value. Jordan Clarkson would also be a good pick. I don't know how all these other teams, if they're taking back any of the Cavaliers' contracts, probably want one of the expirings, and Jordan Clark at $13.4 million. He shot the ball pretty well from two-point range this year, though. So that's just – and the teams always seem to value scorers to some degree. The most likely player to be traded, I have Rodney Hood.
And that, yeah, that's fine. I think there's a bunch of guys that are probably going to try to move. Alec Burks is another one. I think they specifically traded him at the time they did so that he would be eligible to be traded again by the deadline. So he's another one to watch. But I think Hood's low number certainly helps.
There's also David Nwaba, too, who is just owed nothing this year. He's been battling injuries on and off, but he's just someone who can defend basically twos, threes, and even some fours.
Yeah.
That might just be someone, maybe you use him as a throw-in as part of a bigger trade. But, yeah, I think I skipped over him when I was naming their trade assets, too. I don't know why I did that, or I did name him. Either way, David Nwaba is there. What to watch, you already kind of just touched on it. Is Kevin Love even in play would be the question. No, you just laid out all that stuff. If you're the Cavaliers, are you even willing to move Kevin Love at this point, or does it make more sense to try and reboot his value over the summer or into next season?
Yeah, I would say it probably makes more sense to try and reboot the value, as you put it, because we just talked about this with Chicago. One of the goals of tanking teams should be taking on bad money. Cleveland kind of already has it with Kevin Love. And I don't think you're going to get, you're just not going to get a lot if you try to move him right now. So I think it's a better idea to see what you can get from him next trade deadline, or maybe even next summer.
Everything that you said with is spot on there. The trade idea we have for this team, it already sucks because the Spurs are involved. And the last mid-season trade they made was the great Austin Day for Nando DiColo swap, which is true, unless I missed something when I was researching that a few weeks back. The Cavaliers would receive Pau Gasol, who is owed $6.7 million guaranteed for next year. Quincy Pondexter comes off the books this year, a 2019 second-round pick and a 2020 second-round pick. And the Spurs would receive Alec Burks, Rodney Hood, and David Nwaba. They're essentially giving up two second-round picks to get off of Gasol's money for next year. I understand there's a danger, but I also think both Hood, who you wouldn't have bird rights for if it panned out, and Nwaba could potentially help you this year. And they just need more wing options. David Nwaba's a little undersized, but if he's healthy, he can play those spots. And maybe you just get a layer of shot creation and shot making from Alec Burks while he's there. They do not, however, make trades, so I'm fully aware. I just thought maybe it's more likely this season because they have two first-round picks that they won't be as partial to their second-rounders.
I was so confused at the time the Spurs signed Gasol to that deal.
It had to be like a, because he opted out in the first place and they thought they were going to be CP3 players. That had to be it.
Yeah. But it just at the time and now it's just like, oh my gosh, I don't really know why you did that deal, but that's, I think you're probably onto something there. And Popovich would certainly enjoy more, contested long twos from Alec Burks and Rodney Hood. So that would be good. I like this trade. I could talk myself into San Antonio finding something in Burks and Hood. Like you said, Nwaba, I think, is pretty versatile, kind of a plug and play wing who can do a lot of different things. This trade is pretty good. I'm still just generally, and this will be a topic for another podcast, obviously, but I'm just sort of lukewarm on the Spurs. So, and like you said, they just don't make a lot of deals. So this one's interesting because it does give them some wing help.
On the low, low cheap too. I mean, maybe even Cleveland does it for just a 2019 second round pick because Hood's, but to just pay Gasol $6.7 million. I mean, because $6.7 million isn't a lot of money.
That shouldn't matter to Cleveland. They're not going to be good next year. So that's
incredible. And they're not. Hood is, after his Achilles injury flared up again, has just not been good. And David Wabba's been injured all year. So that might be something to look at. Maybe you protect the 2020 pick or something, like top 46 per section or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We are on to everyone's favorite team, the Detroit Pistons. Buyers or sellers? I think they're going to end up being buyers, but there could be sellers.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good way to look at it.
You talked about it before. They're not overwhelmingly close to the playoff picture, but you're ninth in the East and two games back in the loss column. I just don't think they're going to, with their payroll, I just don't think they're going to let that fly. They have no untouchable players. Let's not pretend that they do. Notable trade assets, Bruce Brown, been a revelation for them. Can do some stuff off the dribble. If he ever has a jump shot, wow. Reggie Bullock, expiring at $2.5 million. They are going to get a lot of calls about him if teams think they're prepared to sell. They do have his bird rights, but they have tax concerns next year. Blake Griffin, I think he's a trade asset. Maybe not a big one, but I certainly, at 3 years, $110.2 million, after what he's doing this season, some team gives him something for that.
He's ridiculous this year.
Stanley Johnson's a restricted free agent this summer, and then Luke Kennard. Detroit does have all of their own first-round picks, notable outbound draft picks. That's the extent of their inbound draft picks, by the way. They don't have anything that you look at and say, oh, good, they're getting that. They have no picks incoming. Notable outbound draft picks, though, their 2020 second-round pick is going to Sacramento, 2021 second-round pick to Philly, 2022 second-round pick to Chicago or Memphis, and 2023 second-round pick to Philly. Their best salary matching assets, Langston Galloway, has a year and $7.3 million left on his contract. Reggie Jackson has 1 year and $18.1 million left on his deal after this year. If that's not clear, we're naming the salaries that players have after this season just because those are more. You can trust that we're going to make the money work in trades, and it's more noteworthy to know what these guys are owed long term. John Lohr has another year and $9.5 million left on his deal. Glenn Robinson, $4.3 million team option for next season, so basically expiring. And then Ish Smith expiring at $6 million, and he's just been off and on injured, which is why their point guard situation has been – he's dealing with an adductor injury right now, but that speaks to why their point guard situation is so bleak. Their toughest player to move I did not put in any of the preceding categories. Andre Drummond at 2 years and $55.8 million, just because I believe he is a net negative asset at that money.
Yeah, I can't imagine a team taking him on. I totally agree with that one.
I'm just going to throw this out there really quick. What if, and maybe this is, it wouldn't be something that happens over the summer. Andre Drummond for DeAndre Jordan. If you could just get off of Drummond's money, would you, one, do it if you're Detroit? And two, Dallas does tend to like guys who can profile as rim runners. And Andre Drummond's always had that like Dwight Howard level addiction to the post. Yeah. But still.
Maybe Rick Carlisle could talk him into accepting the role he should have played his entire career. I talked to Isaac Harris about he actually writes for the Mavericks, the Mavericks.com or whatever their official website is. I said, man, I think Vucevic would be an interesting trade target for the Mavericks. And he said, so do I, but Rick Carlisle is just obsessed with rim rolling bigs or something like that. So if you could look at Andre Drummond and say, hey, he's been doing the wrong thing for the last 5 or 6 years of his career, maybe we can convince him to be a rim roller. There's maybe something there.
$27.1 million next year, though. I'd rather not find out the answer to that question.
I know, exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. I would rather just let DeAndre Jordan's money come off the books and try to find a younger guy who can do that.
Yeah, it'd be great when we see like Andre Drummond looking off Luka while he's going to work in the post next year. Most likely player to be traded, I picked Stanley Johnson just because I could see them moving him whether they're buyers or sellers.
Yeah, and I think that's fair.
They are within $500,000 of the luxury tax. That's a problem for trades. what to watch, I think it's pretty clearly, are they going to buy or sell? But what direction do they go to even pick one? Here's our first three-team trade idea, though. And as a note, both the Grizzlies and Pistons are under the tax still after this deal. Detroit would receive Omri Caspi and Mike Conley. Chicago would receive Henry Ellison and Cash from Detroit. And then the Grizzlies would receive Reggie Jackson, Luke Kennard, John Lohr, a 2019 first-round pick, top one protection via Detroit, a 2019 second-round pick via Detroit, and then a top 55 protected second in 2020 from Chicago, just so that all teams touch each other and that pick would never convey. And if it does, then Chicago has done one hell of a job rebuilding overnight. The protection on that pick is interesting to me and what would make the deal for Memphis. And doesn't Reggie Jackson seem like he could be a good tank commander? Like just someone who's going to put up numbers next year in Memphis when there's really no one out there besides Triple J and Luke Kennard and whoever they draft.
Yeah. Detroit was one of the first teams that came up when that report from, I think it was Woj, like a week or so back, said that they're or it might have been Mark Stein. Memphis is finally listening to offers on Gasol and Conley. And Detroit came up, and I just, you know, I thought logistically that makes a lot of sense. If Detroit's a buyer, I think he changes that team quite a bit. If he's suddenly the starting point guard, the question was, how do you get him there? And I think this is really interesting, the way that you've gotten him there. Not only do you get Mike Conley, you get Omri Caspi, who I think helps their shooting woes a little bit. And then Memphis gets, forget Reggie Jackson. He's a good tank commander, as you said. But they also get Luke Kennard, who's an interesting youngish player, and some picks as well. So I like this deal. I think it makes sense for everybody, especially with that little caveat that you laid out before about how it keeps all these teams under the tax.
Yeah, that's why the Chicago Bulls are involved, because someone needs to take Ellinson. There could also be another team, but he's someone that teams can just acquire. So if Detroit's willing to send some cash and to get Mike Conley while ducking the tax, something they should consider to me. And that's if I actually don't think they should make that deal, because I think they should sell. But I understand if you're not going to move Griffin or Drummond, why you would view yourself as buyers.
If it was me, I would probably say they should sell too.
What's important in this deal too, though, is they keep Bullock. So they're going to have his bird rights, and there's going to be tax implications, of course. But at least you have a pathway once you're giving up Kennard. Okay, we have at least one proven shooter on this team now.
Yeah.
I'm with you there. We are on to the New York Knicks, everybody's favorite disaster piece. They're sellers, pretty clearly, unless you want to count trying to clear cap space for free agency as buying something, then they would be pretty clearly there. They're untouchable players. And these are all concocted, assuming they're not going to trade for Anthony Davis. I just want to throw that out there. Kevin Knox, Kristaps Porzingis, who's a restricted free agent this summer, and Alonzo Trier, who can't be moved after signing his deal. Notable trade assets, maybe we should put assets in bunny quotes, Trey Burke, Damian Dotson, non-guaranteed salary for 2019-2020, Luke Kornet, who has an implicit no-trade clause, Emmanuel Mudiay, restricted free agent this summer, Frank Ntilikina, Mitchell Robinson, and Noah Vonleh, who would not come with bird rights, but has for the most part this year, if anyone didn't watch their loss to the Dallas Mavericks, where he played zero defense, it looked like the rest of the team. He's been really good this year. Notable inbound picks, they have Cleveland's, Houston's, or Orlando's 2019 second-round pick. It'll be the least favorable. Charlotte's 2020 second-round pick and Charlotte's 2021 second-round pick. Those last two picks are actually valuable because the Knicks trade away their picks like they're nothing. Their 2019 second-round pick is headed to Brooklyn. Their 2020 second-round pick is going to Charlotte or Philadelphia. And their 2021 second-round pick is going to Philly. Their best salary-matching assets, Tim Hardaway Jr., 2 years and $37 million after this season. Mario Hezonja, Andy's favorite player of all time, is expiring at $6.5 million. Ennis Kanter expiring at $18.6 million. Courtney Lee has another year and $12.8 million left on his contract after this season. Lance Thomas on the books for $7 million next year, but his salary is non-guaranteed if they waive him by June 30th, and then it's only $1 million guaranteed. Their toughest player to move might be an interesting conversation. I put Tim Hardaway Jr.
And I think that's probably fine. You could maybe say Courtney Lee there, but obviously $12 million is a lot easier, and over 1 year is easier to move than what Tim Hardaway's got. But
could it also be Canner, just because you're not looking to take on money, and so to get an expiring contract for an expiring contract is always sort of tough, and you're dealing with such a monstrous one from a big man.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess a lot of the guys they need to trade, it's hard to find one that's like super easy to move. So it's a tough kind of situation for the Knicks.
No one should feel bad for them though. Most likely player to be traded, I have Noah Vonleh, just because I know there might be value in having him with you for the rest of the year, but you don't have his bird rights, and you could just, if you're going to have money this summer, if you don't land a star, you could just try and go re-sign him. And they really made a mistake by not brokering a team option or non-guarantee for next year the way the Pelicans did with Jahlil Okafor. I took shit on Twitter for mentioning that yesterday, saying, oh, good on the Pelicans for putting in that team option. And people were like, oh, well, that's what always happens. And it is, but, Vonleh didn't have a market either, just like Okafor, really. There was questions as to whether he was even going to make the roster. So that's a miss. I think he's their most likely to be player to be traded.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Their luxury tax situation, almost $10 million on the luxury tax, so plenty of flexibility. I think what to really watch for are two things. Will they actually shed salary for free agency, or are they going to wait to move Lee and Hardaway over the summer? There is some value in maybe just waiting and only making those deals with sweeteners if they have to. And then are they willing to move Moutier or Vonleh? Can they get anything for them rather than having to look at, one, you don't have any rights to Vonleh, so you could pay him anyway this summer even if you get rid of him. And then with Moutier, they really shouldn't be paying him this year as a restricted free agent. Here's my trade idea, and I actually think it's my opus. The Knicks receive Kosta Koufos, Zach Randolph. The Kings receive Tim Hardaway, Noah Vonleh, and a 2020 second round pick from Charlotte via New York. This actually gives Sacramento cap space. And so they have $11 million in cap. After this trade, they have $12.6 million in cap. So they could go out and then broker like an even more lopsided trade for a wing like Harrison Barnes or Otto Porter. And if they wanted to, they could also send Yogi Ferrell in this deal and force the Knicks to send Trey Burke elsewhere or waive him. And then all of a sudden you're looking at another $3 million. So if they wanted to, I'm just saying, they could end up with $16.5 million in space. That really helps you acquire a Barnes or a Porter, I would think. And they're also getting – they're the only team with Memphis out of the running that might view Hardaway as something more than a net negative asset. And then they had interest in Canner. Vonleh is better. And I know he doesn't give you on the glass what Canner does, but you could build some interesting front courts this season if you're looking to make a playoff push with Bielitsa and Vonleh, Marvin Bagley and Vonleh, or Vonleh and Cauley Stein. He can play with all of their bigs. And Tim Hardaway Jr., by the way, is still shooting 38% on pull-up threes.
And Vonleh, the drop-off on the boards that you mentioned is probably not that huge from Canner to him. He's become suddenly this like really multifaceted
brings the ball up the court. Could you imagine him in the Kings fast paced system?
Yeah, he'd be really interesting for them. And Tim Hardaway would be better suited coming off the bench. I mean, there's no way he would start over Buddy Hield. So if he's in sort of more of a confined role and playing against reserves, that might help him too. So yeah, this is a really interesting deal for sure.
And he showed he could defend one-on-one off the bench in Atlanta. So you're right, coming off the bench could be good for him. Orlando Magic, our final two teams. Buyers or sellers? I have could be buyers, should be sellers.
I think that's probably fair.
Do you think they're ultimately going to buy or sell?
If I had to guess, I would say buy.
I'm actually with you, which is crazy to say because they're still probably not making the playoffs. But no. Vooch has just made it awkward because he's a top 25 player right now. Notable trade assets, DJ Augustine has a year and $7.3 million left on his deal after this one. Mo Bamba, Aaron Gordon, 3 years and $54.4 million after this year. Jonathan Isaac, Wesley Iwundu, team option for 2019-2020. Terrence Ross, expiring at $10.5 million. Jonathan Simmons has a $1 million guarantee for next year. And Vooch, who's expiring at $12.8 million. Notable inbound draft picks, they have Brooklyn's 2019 second rounder, Cleveland's, Houston's, or Portland's 2019 second-round pick, most favorable, and then Oklahoma City's 2020 first-round pick, top 20 per section. They have no notable outbound draft picks. Their best salary-matching assets, it's really just, aside from players we've already mentioned, Timofey Mozgov has a year and $16.7 million left on his deal. There is, of course, Evan Fournier, but I have him as their toughest player to move just because he's owed 2 years and $34 million after this season.
And I think that's probably fair. And he hasn't played terribly well this season either.
Oh, he's been bad.
He's certainly not helping his own trade value.
Most likely player to be traded. I have Terrence Ross, and I don't even feel great about that.
Yeah, I guess if you had to pick one, it would probably be him. You could see the possibility of Vucevic being moved, but like you said, with how well he's played, and how just traditionally difficult it is to get big name players in Orlando. They had to draft Shaq. They had to draft Penny. They had to draft Dwight Howard. And Vucevic came over in his rookie season, I think, from Philly. So,
For some reason, I thought he was on Philly for longer. I think you're right now, though, that I'm thinking about it.
His first or second season, I think. But the thing is, if you trade Vucevic, it's like, what's our path to getting a top 25 player again? I know Vucevic is already pretty old. He's not old. He's in the middle of his prime. It's older than the rest of Orlando's timeline, I guess I should say. But it would just be – it's a big decision to try to move on from that guy based on what he's done this season.
I'm with you. And I'll get into that in a second. But their salary cap situation, plenty of flexibility under the tax. What to watch for? Are they going to buy, sell? Could they do a little bit of both? Or may they sell Terrence Ross but try to get a good player who helps them with Vooch? Can they acquire a point guard? Are they open to taking on salary? There are so many questions with this team. Yeah. So I didn't write down their trade because I was waffling. There are permutations where they could try and get Hamidou Diallo and maybe a second-round pick from OKC for Terrence Ross with filler. I have them as buyers. And here's the trade. So I'm actually just throwing this at you right now. Mo Bamba and Jarrell Martin for Dennis Smith Jr., Maxi Kleba, and Dorian Finney-Smith. And maybe if you're Orlando, if Dallas is willing to won't give you both Kleba and Dorian Finney-Smith, I'd still be willing to do that deal. I don't know how much Mo Bamba's value has fallen. He's actually shooting well from three over the past couple weeks, I believe. Has an extra year left on his rookie scale deal, and he was just viewed as this transcendent talent ahead of the 2018 draft. And we know that, you know, Rick Carlisle wants rim runners, but Bamba kind of gives you the best of both worlds. The Mavericks don't play Kleba heavy minutes, even though they should be. I'd just be, if you're going to keep Vooch or carry his cap hold, then why is Mo Bamba there? It's because those two can't play together.
Who else was Dallas getting? Mo Bamba and who?
It's just Jarrell Martin as filler. And I'm banking on Bamba having – I would rather – long term, who would you rather have, Dennis Smith or Mo Bamba? I think it's Bamba.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer for me. But I think what's kept Dallas hovering around 500 all season is that bench. So if they lost Finney-Smith and Kleba, that's tough.
Would you give up one?
That's closer. I think I would probably rather keep Kleba if I'm Dallas, but I mean, that's like a perfect world type of thing for the Mavericks. Of course, they would rather keep Kleba. Were there any picks involved?
No, this was just the – there could be – I mean, Orlando has its own first, but I'm not giving up Mo Bamba in a first for this deal. No.
How much different are Smith and Bamba's salaries?
They work straight up.
Is that interesting?
I feel like that's selling a little. That's selling too low on Bamba for Orlando.
Yeah. It would also be kind of crazy if Dallas had to give up a pick in a Dennis Smith trade. If it was like Smith and a second rounder for Bamba, something like that.
What if it was just Kleba and Smith for Bamba? Kleba's someone who can more clearly play with
Vooch. Yeah. And if you're getting Bamba back, there's not a ton of minutes for Kleba anyway. They've already got Dwight Powell. And I think the general foundation of this trade is really interesting because Orlando is one of those teams that's very transparently needed a point guard for a few years now. The one that you have typed in to the doc, at least as I have it now without refreshing it, is DSJ. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, I penciled because I was going through a bunch of different ones. I wanted to settle on one, and I just never put it in there. So I threw this one
at that makes sense to me.
So the one we're settling on is DSJ and Maxi Kleba for Mo Bamba and Jarrell Martin as the filler. Although you could, if you know, you don't even have to include Jarrell Martin to make the deal work.
Yeah, I think that's certainly an interesting starting point at the very least.
Who, if anyone, you think it's Orlando that has to send a pick?
Well, if they're getting Kleba back, then maybe. If it was just Smith and Bamba, then Dallas might have to send a pick.
It's weird how Kleba tips the scales like that. Maybe that means because we both don't really know what to think of this trade, maybe that means it's a good one.
Yeah, that could be. And Kleba tipping the scales is kind of funny, but it's he's been really good this season.
No, he's been fantastic.
He's a little older too, so that
27, that's something to factor in.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor.
Mo Bamba and Luka Doncic running pick and roll though, I'd pay to see it.
That could be really interesting. And if Rick Carlisle really does love rim rollers, then he certainly has the profile to be that.
On to our final team, the Washington Wizards. Buyers or sellers? There could be sellers, yeah. Could be buyers, should be sellers though.
Agreed.
Untouchable players: Bradley Beal and Chasson Randall, who just cannot be traded. Their notable trade assets: Troy Brown Jr., Thomas Bryant, who's an early bird RFA this summer and has been absolutely balling for them. Jeff Green, who is quietly shooting a zillion percent from three-point range. Another one of your favorites, Thomas Satoransky, who is a restricted free agent this summer. They have all their own first-rounders, which is an accomplishment for the Wizards. Notable outbound draft picks: 2019 second to Charlotte or Denver, 2020 second to Milwaukee, 2021 second to Milwaukee as well, and then a 2022 second to Cleveland. Their best salary matching assets: Trevor Ariza, who is expiring at $15 million, but he cannot be combined with another player, I believe. I don't think they got that trade in under the window. No, they definitely didn't. So he cannot be traded in combination with another player, but still could be an interesting asset if they decide to sell. They have Sam Dekker expiring at $2.8 million. Dwight Howard has a $5.6 million player option for 2019-2020. Jan Mahimi is owed $15.5 million next year. It's a player option. And then Otto Porter has 2 years and $55.7 million on his deal. Player option in 2020-2021. Toughest player to move? To me, it has to be John Wall. Out for the season and is owed 4 years and $170.9 million after this year.
That's a no-brainer. And if we had a category for toughest player to move in the entire NBA, he might be in contention for that.
Yeah, I mean, he was tough to move to begin with. And they also have Markieff Morris, by the way, who's expiring at $8 million. But he was tough to begin with before his heel surgery. And now you're going to have to wait to see what he looks like in 6 to 8 months.
And not only is his value going down just by sitting, but the fact that the Wizards are better without him can't help either.
No, that does not look great. Most likely player to be traded, though, for this team is interesting. I went with Otto Porter again because I think that he's someone who could be moved in a situation where they're trying to duck the tax, whether they're trying to get back players who help them, or whether they're just flat out selling.
Yeah, and I think his numbers are down this year, and I think it's largely because of the mess that Washington has been this season. I still think he makes a lot of sense for a lot of teams. And I think teams like the Jazz or, spoiler alert, the Kings could still talk themselves into him being the player that he was the two seasons before this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. Their salary cap situation, almost $6 million over the luxury tax. What to watch for? I didn't pencil it in. I have it written down on the side, though. Will they look to shed salary or add talent for the playoff push? I came up with a trade idea that maybe does a little bit of both. The Wizards receive Willie Cauley-Stein, Justin Jackson, and Amon Shumpert, and they give the Kings Jeff Green and Otto Porter. Truthfully, giving up Jeff Green is kind of tough in that deal because he's been playing so well, but I would rather get just the flyer on Justin Jackson since Jeff Green is on a one-year deal, and he's also Jeff Green. Otto Porter's been dealing with some injuries. Is his ankle that's bothering him? What is the Otto Porter injury that's right now? I can't remember for some reason. I just think if you're going to be able to duck the tax and you get a playable big in Willie Cauley-Stein, who you'll have a restricted free agent rights on, and Amon Shumpert, you'll have bird rights on him if you want for free agency this summer, but he comes off the books, and so now you're giving yourself more flexibility moving forward. And if you're the Kings, they've had eyes for Otto Porter, and Jeff Green, since their big man situation is kind of weird when you look at do they view Marvin Bagley as a center? What are those lineups going to look like with Bielitsa and Bagley together in the front court long term, or at least for the rest of this season? And so Jeff Green has played some center with Washington. Is just you could stick him in the four or five spots and give yourself more options.
I think they should view Marvin Bagley as a five, and I think they're still.
Oh, I'm with you.
I think they're still.
I don't think they do, though. Is my.
I know. And maybe this is them just kicking the can down the road, not wanting to pay Willie Cauley-Stein and thinking, well, we have a couple more years of rookie scale contract in Harry Giles. So I think it makes a lot of sense for the Kings, especially if they're going to be, you know, really forward thinking and trying to play modern basketball and your front court is suddenly Otto Porter at the four and Bagley at the five. I think that's super interesting. A lineup of Fox, Hield, Bogdanovich, Porter, and Bagley is really, really intriguing to me. The Kings being in on Otto Porter, I like it. I just think he kind of fits what they're doing. And the Kings making the playoffs this season is still a pretty significant long shot in my mind, but I like that they're going for it. I mean, it's been a long time since they've been in. They finally have something to be a little bit excited about, and I say go for it.
I'm with you. And fun fact, if they wanted to, they can pull off both this trade and the Tim Hardaway Jr. trade. None of those pieces overlap. Ooh. Just saying.
Interesting. Okay. I think that wraps us up. We've done every lottery Eastern Conference team, at least as they stand right now. The Pistons and the Wizards may get into the playoffs still, but I think we're fairly safe on what we picked. Was there anything else you wanted to hit before we wrap up?
No, that's it.
As always, we invite and encourage each and every one of you to subscribe to the podcast, to rate and review the podcast if you've already done those things. Share it with your friends, share it with your family. As I always say, it will brighten their lives, brighten their days. It will lighten their metaphorical loads. They'll thank you for it every day of their lives from this point forward. If you want to talk to us about the podcast, you can find Dan on Twitter at Dan Favale, Favale. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The sponsor is at NBA_math. And until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Beno Udrih and Kyle Anderson.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.